right, everybody. Well, please join me in welcoming George coming down from Fresno tonight to our stage. Thank you. Thank you, Paul. My name is George. I'm an alcoholic. That's important.
Just got his phone number.
I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is January 23rd, 1989. My home group is the Village Group. We meet in Fresno on Tuesday. Night is a closed meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Starts at 8 o'clock, runs till 9:30. Friday is an open meeting, same time, 8 to 9:30. They have a Sunday night big book study from 7 to 8 o'clock. The Tuesday and Friday night meetings that I referenced are open participation meetings. And the Village Group has been in existence. We just had a 45-year anniversary party, so they've been in existence since about 1965. I started out in Fresno at Fresno Fellowship. My first meeting that I ever went to in Alcoholics Anonymous was approximately September of 1988. As I referenced earlier, my sobriety date is January 23rd, 1989. I was deathly afraid of ever having to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Why? I don't know. This will make me shorter. I remember, the only thing I really remember about Alcoholics Anonymous, I think, is when I was going to Fresno City College in the mid-70s. There was a great TV program I used to watch called Hill Street Blues. And I remember Captain Farrillo was in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, so I just blew his anonymity. But I remember there was a great character in that series. His name was J.D. And he was, you know, he was a detective, but he was my kind of guy because he would do the kind of things that I related to. He would drink a lot. He would come into work hungover, and being a cop, he would do things that, you know, would get us in trouble. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in January of 88, I had picked up my third DUI in 3 years, the year before in 1987, about October, November, and I went to a lawyer that I had used on my second DUI, which was about, you know, 16 months before. Mike was his name. He's still around in Fresno. And I gave Mike $1,500, and I said, Mike, I go, you know, I can't really handle this right now. There's a lot going on in my life, which is, you know, total BS, because the only thing that was going on in my life was drinking and using. That was it. I just said, you know, I can't handle this right now. Here's $1,500. Why don't we just continue this for like a year? And what I did for that whole year was something I believe that any good alcoholic would do. My solution back in 1987-88 was to, one day at a time, drink. And that's what I did. Exactly what I did. And Mike had to let me go because, as all good lawyers, he wanted more money. And I just despise those guys nowadays. But anyway, he wanted more money because he said, George, you know, I can't, you know, can keep continuing this. And he brought me to court, basically, in July of 88 to discharge himself from the case. And I had been with my kind of girlfriend. We lived together for about 2 or 3 years before that. And I had been living with my my parents for about a year before that. And I was sitting outside the one of those 8 floors over there at the Fresno County Superior Courthouse on 1100 Van Ness Avenue. And I've been over at her apartment drinking until about 3 or 4 in the morning. Got up, took a shower, got in my car, didn't have a driver's license anymore because on my third DUI I refused any kind of a chemical test. So basically that was an automatic revocation. And I believe it's still that way today. And I sat down next to Mike. I was wearing the same one of my great blue and pink print Hawaiian shirt. And Mike looked at me and he said, "Look at you." He goes, "You're drunk right now." And I looked over at him and I said, "You know what? You're full of shit. You don't even know what you're talking about." And, you know, because I had figured, because I hadn't had a drink in, you know, about 4 or 5 hours, and I had taken a shower, that that I thought I was okay, that I thought I was, you know, fooling you one more time. And, you know, he was probably the only one that ever confronted me, because 16 months before that, when I got that call from him on my second DUI, and my second DUI was like, I don't know, it was like 0.26 or something like that. I remember my personal was a 0.19. And Mike called me on that second one. It was in Clovis. He just said, "Hey, George, this is Mike. I want you to go down to the Clovis courthouse right now, and I want you to pay your fine. I got you what they call wet reckless. Your fine is the minimum set by statute, $390. And then the first thing that came out of my mouth was, "Do I have to go to those AA meetings?" And he said, "No." I mean, I was at that Clovis courthouse at the clerk's window to pay that fine. I wrote him a check for $390. And then I proceeded about a mile and a half away to my favorite bar, which was, it was called Leon's Bar in Clovis. It was on Shaw and Willow. I used to bartend there too. I went to high school with my friend Leon. And he was a year older than me, and his dad had bought him this bar. And I was at that time I was a certified public accountant, and Leon had to get rid of his bartender, and he asked me if I wanted a job, and I immediately said yes. I mean, I believe that, you know, this was my calling. And I loved that job, and that was like in 84, 85, and that was, what, 25 years ago? So the statute of limitations has passed, I believe, but that was a great job. I was collecting unemployment. I was getting $40 to $45 a shift, working five shifts a week. On Fridays or Saturdays, I think he paid $60 a shift because it was busier. So you're looking at what? I don't know if I can count too well right now, $250 to $300 a week for those shifts, plus your tips. And on Friday and Saturday nights, you probably get at least, you know, $80, $90 in tips, maybe $25 or $30 during the weekdays. And then the real benefits of the job was not only the all the alcohol that you could drink, And the girls, and I don't know why they were attracted to me, but it seems like when you're giving away free drinks, there's some kind of attraction to that. But the biggest benefit for me was all the money that you could steal. You know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, they always talk about liars, cheats, and thieves. And I had a system that I think about was, you know, the best. It was... I mean, you know, I still blame it on him. His dad, you know, owned some of the famous bars and sandwich shop in Fresno. His dad and brothers owned the old Fresno Hofbra. His dad and brothers owned the Silver Dollar up on Shaw and 41. And then his dad bought him this bar. But Leon, he never counted his bottles. He never counted it in inventory once. And, you know, so still, you know, 21 years of sobriety, I like to shift the blame onto him. And I like the setting here that we have in this meeting hall. I noticed this earlier when I was sitting down. When I was sitting over there, I thought it's a taco bar. And then I see it's a tiki bar. Be back in 5 minutes. And then it kind of looks like that. For me, that would be more appropriate. That would be like a jail. Because when I drank, I drove. And when I drove, even though I drove pretty well and I never got in a wreck and I never hit any people, I never hit a bicycle, I hit my first DUI was in the parking lot of Black Angus. I hit the curb. I didn't even make it out of the parking lot. So that was my worst driving pattern. That was right in front of a Fresno County deputy sheriff. Ended up being a guy I went to junior high school with. So I guess that's the worst, but, you know, I did all those things that I think, you know, normal drunks do, you know. It's like, you know, when I was telling Mike, I'll call him Mike K, my attorney, that, you know, he was full of crap because he was saying, how dare you say that I was, you know, still drunk. And then, and I remember that third DUI, I was like, I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I was out of control. I was drinking every day. I had, between that time I hired him, which was like October of 87 through the next year, well, July, August of 88, I had hooked up with a guy, CPA. I worked right down the road in Dinuba. So some of you guys may know who he is. So I won't say anything. I worked in Visalia 10 years ago. You know, if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, I think that, you know, you can do almost anything you want. And, you know, I'm not a great student or anything. I graduated from Bullard High School in Fresno, California in 1973. I didn't play basketball. I'm 6'8". I didn't play football. I didn't play baseball. They didn't have soccer around then. They didn't have volleyball. They didn't have water polo. I excelled in academics. I graduated with a 1.6 grade point average. I had to go to Fresno City College on a probationary status. I did okay there. I was sharing with a friend after I did my 2 years there. 2.5, really. I busted my knee up playing racquetball, so I dropped out that semester when they cut me up. And I was talking to my friend, he wanted me to go to a treatment facility in Fresno last night. It's called the Turtle Lodge. He was like an H&I panel. And I told him I didn't do that kind of stuff anymore for certain reasons, because of my job. But he was saying he has just about five more classes that he needs before he can get over to Fresno State and, you know, try to complete his bachelor's degree. He said he's been going to college for 11 years. And for me, when I turned 21, I was at City College for the 2.5 years. I did pretty well. I mean, City College is City College. It's like a high school with ashtrays. And then when I got over to Fresno State, I didn't pledge a fraternity, but I was working at a pinball machine and a coin-op pool table place, and they served like those savory sandwiches and burritos, and they had beer for sale. And the guy that owned it, his name is Gino, he had a Lambda Chi alum, I guess you could call it, or he rushed Lambda Chi when he went to Fresno State, and all his buddies would come over to the pool and pinball place, and I worked there when I was 21. And they would come there after their softball games, and they would drink, and they would play dice games, and that intrigued me. And it showed me how to play dice games and drink beers if you lost. If you did certain things wrong, you had to pay the price. And for me, you know, to do something wrong and to pay that price was pretty good, because if you, like, dropped a dice off the bar, it was like a half a beer or a beer or something like that. Just hanging out with those guys for a short period of time from like August or September, whenever the school year starts, through May or June when the school year ends. My grade point average, I mean, I passed all my classes, but, you know, it went down considerably. And I was telling Chris on the phone, you know, that there was a big difference between, you know, the, I guess, academic wherewithal, for lack of a better term, between Fresno City and Fresno State. And then I added in that, you know, that I was doing the outside Lambda Chi drinking. And I told Chris on the phone, that's the guy who asked me to go do the H&I with him. I said, You know, at that point I decided for myself to, I would only drink on Saturday nights in my senior year at Fresno State. And that was probably the last time, which I was, at that point I was about 22 years old, 21 or 22, 22. That was the last time I was probably able to control and enjoy my drinking. And it talks about that in the big book. And actually, we talked about it when somebody, one of the gentlemen behind us, read a portion of chapter 3. I think it says the great obsession of every abnormal drinker is that somehow, someday, he will be able to control and enjoy his drinking. And if you, I start to, you know, get over analytical, but you know, that's like a double entendre, because it says not only somehow, but some way he will be able to control and enjoy his drinking. So you have to get all of it right in order to do it. And I did it for that last year at Fresno State, and once I graduated at 22 years old, it was off and running. One of my favorite movies, I think still of all time, was in 1978 when I just got out of Fresno State. It's called Animal House. It was with John Belushi and Tim Matheson and a few others. And I just remember there was this one line, there was this guy, I can't remember his name, his name was Pinto, and his girlfriend was a major player in the movie also. Her name's like Karen Black, maybe it is, I don't know. But she just said, what are you gonna get drunk every weekend with your buddies once you graduate from college? And he goes, no, I'm gonna get drunk every night. And that's pretty much how it was for me, that my goal, and I did it, was to get drunk every night. I got a married in 1979, and that was pretty much that was over pretty much in 1979. I got married in the late 78. I have to apologize. I'm getting older now, so I'll be 55 years old here in about 2 weeks. So, but the thing I was getting at was that you can go back to school at 6 years of sobriety. I thought I needed something to. I wanted to do something that I always wanted to do since I was like 12 or 13. I wanted to be a lawyer, so I went back to school, went to San Joaquin College of Law, flunked out my first year, went back, passed that year, got out in 2 more years after that, sat for that grueling bar examination, passed that on the third try. So come November of this year, I'll be practicing with the California State Bar for 10 years. And my first job was Visalia District Attorney's Office. Prosecuting, I think I was only here for 11 months, but I think I did have misdemeanors for like the first 6 months. I think I tried about 11 DUI cases. And I was telling my friend Mike about the one I lost. So, you know, you can do almost anything in Alcoholics Anonymous if you're just, and for me, law school was the hardest thing that I ever did in my life. I just, I did not enjoy it. I wanted to quit, but I stuck it out one day at a time. And, so anyway, that's, I don't know why I got off on that. Yeah, when I was sitting there for that third DUI, Mike had successfully gotten out of the case, and I was turned over to the public defender's office. And we all know what a great job they do. And I was, you know, I was crazy. I was insane, and I just said, and I refused on the chemicals test, and I was telling my lawyer that I'm going to trial. I am going to trial. And the judge made me sit in that courtroom all day. Everybody else was gone by about 2 o'clock, and I was there till like 4:30. And she goes, I'm going to go talk to the judge, and I'll come back. And she came back, and she said, this is what the judge has offered you. He said, it appears to him, because of your prior record, you picked up a DUI in 1985. That's when I was 30 years old. And then you picked up a DUI in 1986. And now here you are, even though you got pulled over in 87, here we are in September of 88. It appears to the judge that you might have a drinking problem. And I didn't listen to that portion of it. And he said, the judge said, what he's going to do for you is that if you come back to court in 30 days, mid-October, and you show the judge that you have a 28-day, 30-day treatment program ready to go to, that he will give you the minimum fine of $390 instead of whatever it was back then, about $1,500, to help you pay for a treatment program, and to give you like 30 days on the adult offender work program. And being the astute business person that I am, that sounded like a pretty good deal. And I said, okay, I'll take it. And so they did whatever they do in those courts of law, and they said, come back on, I think it was October 18th or something like that. So I had about a month and change. And the judge also said, oh, and go to two meetings a week. And so I went to two meetings a week. I would have my, I tried not to drive, but that didn't work too well. And my friend Doug would drop me off, usually at the closest meeting over by Leon's Bar in Clovis. And then he would pick me up at whenever the meeting ended at 7:30 or 8:30 or 9. And I would go in and I would, you know, usually it would be, I'd have my court card signed just on the last 2 days of the week. And like any good alcoholic, and I'm still a great procrastinator. And then I go in the bar and I drink, and I kind of just put that thing aside in the back of my mind somewhere or where I sit. And I just said, I woke up on a Monday morning and I had to be in court on Tuesday, and I hadn't checked out any treatment programs. And so I called this place in Fresno. I just started, you know, there was ads on KMTH channel 26 back, and that was in 1988, about programs. I think the one in Kingsburg, I can't remember the name of it anymore. There was the aversion program that you went to somewhere in the this portion of the valley. I think you drink interviews or something like that, and then they put you in a bar setting. And I started calling some of these places. I called the ARC in Fresno back in 1988. You know, they wanted like $12,000 to enter their treatment program. I'm of the opinion that if you have $12,000, you haven't hit bottom yet. I stole that from Sam Kinison, who said that a long time ago. So I have to give credit where credit is due. I drove out to CAP on West Whitesbridge Road, and I went over there and I said, and they go, well, we can put you in the 72-hour detox program. You know, you don't understand. I got to be in court tomorrow morning. And the guy looked at me and he said, you know what? You're going to jail. And I said, thank you very much. And then I remembered I had gone to the Saturday night speaker meeting at Fresno Fellowship, and there was a guy there. His name was Alan R. He was a guy I remember from high school. And he graduated a year or two before me, and he'd been sober about 2 or 3 years, and he spoke of his experience, strength, and hope in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he talked about a place, a treatment center that he went to over in Monterey Pacific Grove. It was called Beacon House. And I don't know why I remember that name, but I called them up because they were in the phone book, the Fresno directory, and I called them up over in Monterey PG, and I told them, this is my plight, this is what I need. And they said, we can get you beds available tomorrow morning. Back then it was only $2,000, and I had to hustle my parents for that money. And I said, well, you don't understand, I got to be in court tomorrow morning. They said, well, the next available is you're going to have a bed available on Friday. And I said, well, you know what? That's going to work for me. I think that's going to work. So I went to court that next day on Tuesday, and I had told the judge that I had a program. I didn't hear what he said back in September, but he said he wanted documentation. He wanted like some kind of formal written piece of paper that substantiated or showed them that I was going to go into this 28-day treatment center. And I, Your Honor, I don't have that. So I got a phone number, and he had his clerk right next to him call this place and save my ass, because the lady said, yeah, we've got this gentleman. He's supposed to come in here on October 22nd, 1988. And that was Tuesday. I didn't drink that day, and I didn't drink on Wednesday. And I remember Thursday rolled around, and the reason I remember it was Thursday, because it was October 21st, 1988. My beloved Los Angeles Dodgers had just won the World Series. I think I'm in Dodger country. But I just remember that they beat the A's that year. And that was that night, and my friend had called me, my friend that used to drop me off at meetings, Doug. He died about 8 or 9 years ago from doing the same thing that he and I used to do together 21 years ago, and that was drinking and everything that goes on with that. Doug called me, and it was about, 9 o'clock, 9:30. Said, hey, man, let's go to Leon's. Let's go drink a few. And I said, well, I'm supposed to go to this treatment center tomorrow. My sister's going to drive me over to Pacific Grove, Monterey area. I don't know if I should do that. And really, he goes, oh, come on, the Dodgers won the World Series. And I go, okay. So he picked me up. We rolled over to Leon's in Clovis about 10 o'clock. And it was weird over there. I didn't know what to expect going over to this 28-day treatment program. I'll tell you the truth, I didn't. I did that to satisfy the court. When I got out on November 18th, 1988, my sister picked me up in my Z28 Camaro. I spent some time with my folks and my sister, my older sister. I have a sister who's 7 years older. When I got married in 1979, she had moved back in with my folks. And so that was, early 80 to 88, and she was living there. We went back over to my folks' house where I was living too. Got there about 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. I sat there and I listened to their stuff for about 2 hours, and I said, I got to go. I got to go. And it took me about, I went to Doug's house, and it didn't take me much time, and I was off and running one more time, doing the same things that I was always doing, which was, my solution. The thing is that when the judge told me on September 15th to come back on October 18th or October 19th, I had, all that time, I had 30 plus days to find myself a treatment program. And I did the only thing that I believe a good alcoholic knows what or how to do for 30 days, and that was drink and use every single night. And that's what I did. That's what I did. It was only by the skin of my teeth, I believe, that I just happened to call that place, because I remember Alan had mentioned at his speaker meeting, I barely got in under the wire. And, I kind of defined that about 10 months later in October, November of 1989, that's how powerless I was over alcohol. That's how powerless I was over this disease. Faced with whatever it tells you that you're faced with in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, my only solution was to drink. Because that's what I did every day, almost, when I started drinking and using at 12, and I stopped when I was 33. So, I had 21 years of experience in there, to do the only thing that I knew how to do. Got out of Deacon House November 18th of 1988. I remember that because that's my mom and dad's anniversary date. They both passed on since then. And going to meetings, even though I did some stuff that I shouldn't be doing the night before. I went to Central Fellowship in Fresno. I picked up a 30-day chip. And I was going to meetings. I was going to meetings every day. I was going to meetings, and I was drinking and using in between, but I was going to meetings. And they would talk, and then they start calling on you in meetings. Excuse me. So then you got, in my opinion, I want you guys to like me, so I gotta sound good. I was sharing this in a meeting last night too. My pride and ego gets in the way. We talk about, we're driving here from Fresno, character defects. When I did my fifth and sixth step with my sponsor, Kelly S., my first sponsor back in June of 1989, he didn't place a lot of emphasis on character defects. He did point out, because it was in one of the columns that he had me write on that fourth step, it says on page 67 that now we look at where we were wrong. Now we listed our mistakes, where we were selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and full of fear. So that was four pretty good ones, according to him. And he also had myself do another column over on the side of that three or four column inventory, whichever principle you adhere to. He had me pick out the seven deadly sins. I can't remember what they all are now, but if you want to know, they're in step four of the 12 and 12. The 12 by 12 or 12 and 12. It's a 12 and 12. And, you know, pride, ego, anger. Anger in it? Lust and envy and sloth. Sloth's my favorite one. Still today. And, you know, he said that's a pretty good start. He goes, but I think the better emphasis is for you to, you know, go back here on page, whatever it is, 76 and, you know, 75 and 76, there's a 6th of 7th step that says we go home for an hour, review what we have just done, and we make sure that we have a firm foundation with the first 5 steps, and then we sit there for an hour and we ask God, basically, to remove these defects of character. And he goes, but more importantly, what I want you to do after that is next Saturday morning or Saturday at lunchtime, I want you to meet me across the street from Fresno Fellowship at Paulita's Mexican Restaurant, and I want you to bring back that fourth and fifth step list that we just went over for the last 4 or 5 hours. And I went over there and I met him. He even bought me lunch, and he took that list and he gave me an A-step list. And he put this little... Man, I don't know if I want to do all this, because Richard, who came over here with me tonight, see, if I start giving out this stuff, then he's going to know what to expect. So, but for him, it was more important for me to just, you know, keep doing what I call, you know what, it's all essential footwork in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't believe that one step is any more important than any other step. I believe that there's 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's all a complete package deal. But he said that later on, if you stay sober, you know, you'll see how those character defects, especially fear, which I think the big book refers to as the evil and corroding thread that somehow touches every aspect of our life, really drives your life. And I was just sharing this at a meeting Monday night and last night. Last night I shared the Tuesday night meeting at my home group. And it has to do with this. It has to do with job. It has to do with ego. Ego and pride. Says in 12 and 12, on the last page of step 7, so self-centered fear is the chief activator of all our defects of character. Either I'm going to lose something I already have, or I'm not going to get something that I already want. And I heard a circuit speaker 9 or 10 years ago talk about his two biggest fears are rejection and abandonment. And it's, I'm going to lose something that I already have, which is abandonment. I'm not going to get something I want, which is rejection. And to make a long story short, I had this client on a DUI, a misdemeanor DUI, and he picked up two, one in a different county, one in Fresno County, hired me for both of them. And the one in Fresno County, we finally went to court, and he got arrested on this DUI on December 2nd of last year. They finally filed outside of Reedley. And his initial arraignment was like, I don't know, June 3rd or something like that. I did the DMV hearing for him in, I believe it was the end of December. He never had a DUI before that we know of. He lives out of Colorado, but his blood alcohol level on it's called State Route 245, but it was still barely on the Fresno County line. The other one he had was like 5 days prior, the one in another county. They haven't even filed that one yet. But the bottom line was he was his car was down in a turnout, but down an embankment, and the bottom line was his blood alcohol level was a 0.45. You know, and so we did the arraignment. I gave him a copy of the police report. I told him, he said, you know, well, maybe, you know, he goes to, because nobody saw him driving, you know, and there's two elements they got to prove. Driving a vehicle and basically impairment. We'll leave it simple. And just happened that a car was driving by, saw his car parked down there. And according to the officer, the car was parked pretty well. But they went up to the local CDF and said, hey, there's a car back there. CDF came back and he was like comatose behind the wheel, but it was shut off. The key was in the ignition. Anyway, to make a long story short, I told the guy basically, I don't like to try to oversell people, but I like to get business too, especially nowadays because the economy's been so tough. And it has been. The economy's is terrible out there. But I just said, you know, the bottom line is this is what we're going to have to do, and this is what I'm going to have to try to convince these 12 jurors. The thing is, all you have to do is convince one juror out of 12. Make sure his story is reasonable. His story was that he went there basically to, like, kill himself. And because they found a half bottle, half full or half empty, however you like to look at it. I guess in his case, I don't know how he was looking at it. But, you know, he told me this later on after we had spoken so many times. He goes, George, I went there to park, and then I started drinking. I'm okay. And so anyway, the bottom line was that he went out and hired another lawyer to do the trial. This is a guy that's only been in practice for like 2 or 3 years. And this is a guy that I heard from another lawyer that knows him, like, he's done like one trial. I've done like 25 or 30. And, this client, he's, I don't like to say it, but he's kind of a basket case, so. I didn't wish him any ill will or anything like that. I just said, good luck. Good luck. He still has me representing him for the other case in a different county. But it was I couldn't figure that out for a while. You know, I always got to figure everything out on my own. And my sponsor, he's real busy. He's got 30 acres of right. He's real busy with a new business that he started about 4 or 5 years ago that's just going gangbusters. And finally I figured it out is that, you know, it's that rejection and abandonment thing, you know. What it does is it drives the stake through my pride and ego. You know. Because you think this idiot is better than me? He's done one DUI trial and one bench trial? And good luck. I don't care if you got 21 days or 21 years, 21 months of sobriety. It's, the same stuff still crops up. I wish that, and maybe it is, when you're in it, it's hard to realize, but I'm sure 21 years ago, when I first came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have these tools that will help me to change the way I feel, and that's a tough one, but I have these tools, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and these other about 15 billion principles that are espoused in this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have these tools that will allow me to work through these things. But I would think that after 21 years, I would do it a little bit quicker. You know, And I'm sure 21 years ago, I probably would have spun out on this for about a good, you know, month or two. So this way, I only spun out on it still for about, well, like, you know, honestly, if you really want to look at it, since I'm still talking about it, I've been spinning out on this thing since Saturday. 4 days? Is that Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? 4 days? Okay. So, it's getting better. But you know what it says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? It's reflected somewhere in step 9 and before you get to step 10. And it says there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. You know, and this is not it's not an overnight matter. And what I've learned more importantly for me is that, see, I think that after 21 years that 4 days is unacceptable amount of time to let this thing get free rent in my head. And I have to remember that everything that happens in this world is on somebody else's time and not mine. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I'm going to cut this short because we're almost out of time, correct? Getting close. 2 minutes? 5 minutes? I can talk about the 12 steps in 5 minutes. Where was I going with this? I forgot now. What was I talking about? Mike was talking about something. Free rent in my head with respect to the idiot who hired the other idiot. Yeah, and I can't remember now. Well, you know what? Oh. When I was new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I went to Northeast Fellowship, got my cord card signed. This guy was over there. He's crazier than a shithouse rat. He's still sober. I'm not going to mention his name. He's still around. He's probably got like 37 years of sobriety. And he looked at me in this candlelight meeting, and I thought he was sharing with me, and it was a small meeting, about 8 people. But he was pointing. And he does that to everybody, though. And he was pointing. He said, if you don't keep God in your life, you're going to die. And at that time, I was just like, you know, I don't want what you have. My friend's picking me up in 15 minutes, and we're going to go drink, and I think that you should join us. You know, and when I heard that stuff when I was new, it was just kind of like, oh, here we go again. You know, everybody, you know, I don't know, it's just like... I don't know how to say it, you know, it's, I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a great movie, it's with, Jenna Elfman, I remember her, and Matthew McConaughey, it's called EdTV. You guys remember that movie? EdTV. Because what I get up here and say, and what I get out there and do, probably two completely different things, but if we had EdTV, then we could see how people react or respond to different situations, you know, and how they run or manage or let God try to manage our daily lives. And, you know, when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, if I heard a lot of people talk a lot about God or, you know, holy rollers or whatever else you want to call it, I just kind of roll back in my seat and listen, but not really, because, you know, I need something that I can, you know, feel. I need something that I can sink my teeth into. I need something that I can relate to. You know, I can't really relate to, and there's nothing wrong. I mean, I believe in Jesus Christ and today, but I like to hear about, you know, everyday things. I like to hear about somebody who's, you know, 21 days sober that's trying to figure the program of Alcoholics Anonymous out. Because I've got 21 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm still trying to figure out what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. You know, and it says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that... it's probably, I have many favorite lines, but at the end of chapter 4, we agnostics, which I believe is a very important chapter. I've gotten so much stuff out of that chapter. But the last line in We Gnostics is, if we draw near to him, he will disclose himself to us. And it doesn't say, and it's the ABCs, we read always in Fresno, the 12 traditions and how it works, chapter 5, and the ABCs say, see that God could and would if we seek him. It doesn't say that we have to find him. It says that if we seek him. And, you know, I think it's good for me that I always, you know, whatever you want to call it, you know, question why, you know, somebody decided that they thought some other idiot was a better choice than myself to take point four or five to trial. Ooh, that would have been a fun one. But, you know, you know, life for me today, as opposed to 1988-89 when I came in, is pretty much the same. I don't dwell in the stuff that I used to dwell in 21 years ago. I have tools that I can use today in Alcoholics Anonymous. Richard came with us tonight. Richard, sober October 13th. He'll have 2 years. Calls me about... Guess he heard something that I said, and I don't know, you know, I just said, you know, if you're, man, Phil George, will you sponsor me? And I thought, well, you know what, if you're listening to some of the stuff that I'm saying, God bless you. But he called me about, I don't know, 4 months ago, and he goes, hey, man, I got this dude, man, his name's Arnold, and you know, he wants me to sponsor him. And, what do? So I, like, me and Richard went through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous together. We had like a little mini Big Book study, and I go, what do I do, man? What do I do? You know, the guy's saying this is sobriety day, but he's on, you know, whatever it is, a heavy duty tranquilizers that they give you when you're in outpatient treatment centers. What's it called? Thorazine? Something like Thorazine. Anyway, I go, dude, I go, read Working with Others. And it says that the last line is one of the gentlemen read before is to be helpful is our only aim. You know, and I just I don't have any answers. I really don't. I don't have any answers for you. I got answers for myself. I believe that the answers come from within. If you incorporate those 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's 8 o'clock. I appreciate you guys for letting me share tonight. I hope I didn't go too long. And God bless you all, and I'll keep coming back. Thank you very much.